Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, April 14th, 2012. This is episode 865. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle your iPhones, iPads, and smartphones from your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it. Find out what your gadget's worth right now at gazelle.com.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Hello, everybody. It's time for the Tech Guy Show.
And this is the show where we talk about lovely things like technology, computers, the internet, cell phones, lots of cell phones. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, is coming up in about half an hour, 33 after the hour, to talk home theater. Anything on your mind, I'd love to talk about it. So here's the deal. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number you need. 888-827-5536. Let's see. Speaking of which, if you, you know, when I say the number and I say it too fast, there is a place you can go. Their number is right front and center. It's the techguylabs.com. It's our website. Leo.am is a short URL for it. Leo.am. And if you go there, you will see lots of good, useful stuff. For instance, there's the phone number right in the middle of the page there in bright red letters. You see where you can get into our chat room where you can watch or listen live. Show notes from previous programs, links to all of our advertisers, all of that stuff is at techguylabs.com. Or if that's too many letters, you can just type leo.am. That'll work also. Chat room's fun because it's kind of where all the kids in the smart kids in the back of the class sit. The wise acres, they're all in there. You can also tweet me if I don't mention this enough, but I do follow the Twitter, and I'll occasionally take questions from the Twitter or comments or suggestions. I'm just at Leo Laporte, LEOLAPORTE. There's an E on the end. At Leo Laporte. So there's all the ways you can play the home version of our game. Really, the best thing, though, is call in, because, frankly, it's boring if I just sit here and talk all by myself. Your questions and comments and thoughts are all very useful. So I'll say that number one more time slowly. 888-ASK-LEO. So many things to talk about. I don't even know where to begin. Do you use Google Plus? I'm very curious about, I would bet you, it's about 1 million people listen to this show. I would bet you about 900,000, maybe 950,000, maybe 999,999 of you are Facebook users, right? That's the social network of choice. Maybe you use Twitter. Probably a lot of you use Twitter and Facebook. You know, it's not really an either or, is it? I would guess, though, Facebook, if you are online and you're on a social network, you use Facebook primarily because this is where your friends and family are, and it's a good way of staying in touch, isn't it? So Google, I'm not sure if it was, I don't, you know, some say it was envy, Facebook envy. But about a year ago, maybe a little less, I think it was last summer, started something called Google Plus. And because Google is so dominant on the net, you know, if you just, you know, even if you just use them for search, or you just use Gmail, or you just use, any Google thing, Maps, everything but YouTube, you will, when you create an account, you'll be offered a Google Plus social account. It's, you know, think of it as a Twitter/Facebook. And the new black Google bar at the top of the page whenever you use Google, the big number one item on the menu is your name, your first name with a little plus next to it, right? That's so friendly, isn't it? So I think they really are using all of their techniques to get you to use Google Plus. And they claim millions of users. What was the last count? Was it? It's well over 100 million. Something like 170 million users. But I'm just curious if you use Google Plus, because here's why. There's a big story this week about Google Plus being redesigned. But I think probably most people don't use Google Plus, so nobody even noticed. And certainly I wouldn't spend any time talking about it if you didn't care. Now, I'm seeing a number of our chatters say Google Plus is important to them. But I think that they're, you know, if you're in the chat room, you're probably more of a geek than the typical listener. So I'm just curious. I'd love to know. Google Plus, is that something that you use and participate in? And if it is, what do you think of the redesign? You remember at Facebook added timelines, there was a hue and cry, but I think we all kind of got used to it. In fact, we got used to it more than I expected. I thought there'd be much more of a hue and a cry. When Google Plus changed, I literally gasped. I was on the air. And Google Plus is my homepage. I like Google Plus. I like the engagement there. Google Plus is my homepage. And I gasped because I went there and it was like, whoa, what happened? It's very, very different. So I'm just curious. Initial reaction was, oh, I don't like this at all. But as I've kind of gotten used to it, I've kind of come to like it a little bit better. So I guess my question is, do you use this? And do you understand why Google's doing this? It's not pure Facebook or Twitter envy, although I think some of it's that. But I think Google really senses, and I agree with them on this, that search is better if there's a little salt, not a lot. Salt is a good word because it's just a pinch of salt in it that includes what your friends think or what your friends are looking for or what your friends are interested in. It turns out the search results are better that way. Because when you include what your friends are interested in, let's say you're searching for pizza parlors. Well, already they've included where your location is. So you'll find pizza parlors in your neighborhood. But then add on top of that what your friends think is the best. And that makes it, in that case, a better result, right? Unless your friends have terrible taste in pizza. And so Google's, you know, as they're trying to make search better. And so they need social, what they call this in the trade, social signals. They want to add social signals to the search. Just a little pinch. Not too much. Too much, and you don't get what you're looking for. But a little bit makes it more accurate, perhaps, just as they've added a pinch of location. Think of location as the pepper and social as the salt. And they're just shaking it in a little bit. Google was doing this with information from Twitter. They had a deal with Twitter. And so their initial social signals were Twitter. Then Twitter canceled the deal. They've never been able to make a deal with Facebook because Facebook, I think, sees Google as its natural enemy. So Google said, this is what they told me, well, we needed a reliable place to get these social signals, so we created our own social network. Not so much because we want to compete with Facebook, but because we want to get input from people and their friends about who their friends are, what their friends are interested in. Now, in order for this to work, in order for this to have any success, you have to use it and your friends have to use it. So Google's pushing it like crazy. In fact, if you do a Google search for something like music, just music, the word music, what you'll find on the right-hand side of the Google search result page is a link to a bunch of musicians on Google+. And now some people, myself included, think that that's kind of not quite, that's an ad. It says people and pages on Google Plus related to music. They don't do that for Facebook. They don't do that for Twitter. They do it for their thing. And there are those, myself included, who think that Google, if it's going to be a reliable, trustworthy, there's the word I'm looking for, trustworthy search engine, had darn well better be kind of independent in this. They better not have a dog in this hunt. They better be, I don't know. They better not be favoring themselves, right? What do you think? Because they kind of do now. And they'll say, well, we had to do that because we have to get people to use Google Plus because we have to get people to add social signals so that we can give you, it's all for you, a better search. What do you think? Should YouTube be higher ranked? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know about, I've told you about Gazelle before. Gazelle.com. If you're in the market for a new phone, see, I was just thinking Mark could, you know, because she's got an iPhone. She could go to Gazelle and sell her iPhone. Let's see, just out of curiosity, she has an Apple iPhone. Gazelle.com. So you pick what you have and you get an offer. What does she have? 16 gig, 8 gig, 32 gig? It's on Verizon, right? So it's probably a, let's say 16 gig Verizon. I don't know. $132. Wow, that's good. That's if it's in good condition, flawless condition, $162. No dust under the glass, zero scratches. Yeah, so now you can get a check. You can get PayPal. I would suggest the Amazon gift card because they add 5% when you choose Amazon gift card. And then go to AmazonWireless.com and buy a new phone. There you go. Gazelle.com. Now, I have to point out that they have a more narrow scope these days. They've really focused down on all the iOS devices, Blackberries, the major Android, HTC, Motorola, Samsung, and LG, and Nokia phones. They've really, because it turned out 99% of all the products that the people brought to them were in this category. 16 gig Wi-Fi from Verizon. It makes it so much easier now. Because, you know, you saw how quickly I could do that. Good, flawless. If it's broken, they'll take it. Doesn't power on. You still get $155. So don't assume just because it doesn't work, you can't Gazelle it. This is better than selling it yourself because it's easier. They pay the postage. You get the money. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, Gazelle.com. If you have an iPhone or an iPad, an old Android phone, you want to get rid of it and get some money for it, move on to the next new gadget, pay for the upgrade with Gazelle. Don't sell it. Gazelle it. And my tip to you is choose the Amazon card. You'll get a better deal. Like Google Buzz, I burst out, but my friend said that's a no. Why did we need another social network? Doesn't Facebook work all right? A new thing for me to learn. Could take all night. Oh! What is this Google Plus? Ooh! Little Google Plus song. I don't need Google Plus. There's another plus one.
I know. My sense is that real people aren't using Google Plus. They're using Twitter and Facebook. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. You let me know what you think. There's lots to talk about too. Instagram selling to Facebook for $1 billion. It's an iPhone app. It's an iPhone app. $1 billion. Wow. We can talk about AOL spending $1 billion on patents. I'm sorry, Microsoft buying those patents from AOL. So I guess AOL made $1 million on patents. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Our first call of the day, David on the line. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hey, Leo. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. What's up?
Hey, Leo, I've got a little issue here. I'm a pretty private person, and I do have Facebook.
Yeah.
And when I go on to, say, my homepage is my Yahoo Mail homepage, if I read on an article, I start getting all these hits on my Facebook.
Yes, it's called social news.
Yeah, I don't want people seeing what I'm reading.
I don't blame you. Isn't that annoying?
Very annoying.
So, I can help you do this. But the thing, okay. And this happens to everybody. The thing to understand is that the folks at Facebook, chiefly Mark Zuckerberg, have said time and time again, life is better when you're connected with other people, when you share. Their philosophy is it's best to tell people everything you're up to. And so the reason I mention that is because you need to understand that that's their leaning. And so over here on the right-hand side of your Facebook page, you've got that ticker, and it's just telling you what all your friends are doing. Evan just took a photo with Instagram. Robin just commented on somebody's link. David just listened to Laudy Miss Claudie by Elvis Presley. Carrie is listening to something by Balbina. And it shows their pictures. It shows what they're listening to. It shows, in your case, what you're reading.
I bet you half these people don't know that this is going on, and so it's good you noticed that. So here's the thing. The defaults on Facebook now have changed. It used to be when you joined Facebook, the default was private.
Okay.
The default is now public. So when you're using Facebook, in fact, this is a good idea to go into Facebook every month and go into your privacy settings and look at what they're set up for. Look at your apps that are attached. You can change all this. For instance, in the privacy settings, you can see apps and website. Control what gets shared with apps, games, and websites. That's where this Yahoo News is getting shared.
Okay.
And you can then you'll see apps you use, and you can edit the settings. And in there, you'll see, and you might be kind of surprised at the list of things. These are all apps, pages, things that whenever you use them, you get what Mark Zuckerberg calls friction-free sharing. That means you don't have to do anything. It just tells everybody. Every time I read something on the Wall Street Journal, it tells them. So go to those app settings. So again, I'll just run through this again. In your account, it's privacy settings. And okay. Then there's several entries, how you connect, timeline and tagging, apps and what's. It would behoove you to go through all of these.
Right.
But the one you want to look at for this particular question is apps and websites. Click edit settings, and then it will give you a choice of apps you use, how people bring your info into apps they use, instant personalization, public search. The main one you want to do is edit settings. Find the Yahoo News setting. It might just say Yahoo, okay. And edit it. Now, you can edit it. And if I'm looking at my Yahoo, it says, this app can post on my behalf. That's the thing you don't like.
Yeah,
who can exactly. See the post this app makes? Yeah. So you could, for instance, say, yeah, this app can post when I read a news story, but I only want my friends to see it. You could even say, make a list of people you wanted to see it. So, for instance, let's say you're in a club where you guys follow, sporting news. You know, and I just went to the Giants home opener last night, for instance, or yesterday. So, for instance, let's say I have a bunch of buddies. We're all into the baseball. I could have them see everything I read on a baseball site, but no one else. So you get very granular control. And this is the thing that Facebook says, well, this makes up for it. We let you control everything. But let me tell you something. There's more than 150 individual settings in here. And
wow.
Nobody looks at them all. So I think this is your homework for everybody. That's where you're going to go, Dave, to change this. But I think your homework and everybody's homework today is to go to your Facebook. If you use Facebook, go to your Facebook page. Go to the privacy settings, account settings. Go through them all with a fine-tooth comb. This is going to take you a while. And now I've set everything for public, and I do that on purpose. And this is one way to be with Facebook. My assumption is everything I post online, not just Facebook, but everywhere, is public. That way, I don't get tripped up. Because remember, Facebook changes settings sometimes. In fact, even Mark Zuckerberg, who should know how this stuff works, the guy who started Facebook, the guy who's going to make billions of dollars when Facebook goes public in a month, that guy, when Facebook changed his privacy settings last year, a bunch of his private pictures went public. He didn't know. It happened automatically. Within a few hours, he discovered it and took them offline. That's how I know he didn't want them public. So he even got bit by this. So my personal preference and my recommendation is assume everything's public. And act accordingly. Because sometimes, even if you set it private, it could go public by accident or your error or Facebook's error. So I think it's prudent to assume everything's public. Now, on the other hand, I think people get a lot of value out of having control over this. So I want my family members to know when my kids are sick, but I don't want anybody else to know that. That you can control in Facebook, but you have to be very, I think you have to log in every month and look at those settings and go through them and make sure they're doing exactly what you want. And it's not always obvious. and you might even log in or go over to your friend's house and have them log in and see what they can see. Because I can see where people are checking in. I can see what they're reading. I could see what their music they're listening to, what songs they're listening to, but what pictures they're posting, it's pretty amazing.
I don't think this is necessarily bad. I just think that people aren't really paying attention, and Facebook's maybe taking a little bit of advantage of that. Because their default is, oh, life is better if you share. And by the way, we make more money if you share. I'll give you one that I really did have to change. Generally, everything is public, but there is a setting buried somewhere within here that allows them to use my name, if I like something, in an ad to my friends or followers in this case. So it will. So if you see an ad that says, Leo Laporte, you know, likes Ford, there's an ad with my face on it for Ford. Now, I do like Ford, but I don't know if I want them to use my name and face free, so I turned that off. That's an example. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
See, the biggest gift would be for me, and the card attached would say, thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend.
Facebook friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
Facebook friend. Scott Wilkinson's on the line. He's our home theater guru, the online editor for Home Theater Magazine, hometheatermag.com. Joins us every week. My big screen came, Scott. It's a little big.
Oh, yeah?
It looks
what's
like
the,
it's...
What's the size?
Well, I think it's a 120-inch screen.
Oh, that's pretty big. And how far are you sitting
that's
from it?
That's 10 feet. I'll be, well, I don't know, maybe 15 feet.
Yeah, okay. That's about right, pretty right? good to me. Yeah, right.
It's going to be like a drive-in movie.
Yeah. It's one of those little speakers that you hang on the side.
That's a good idea. And somebody in roller skates to feed me popcorn.
Exactly.
I like it. So Scott is a regular at the Home Theater Magazine. He's going to be with us next week. We're going to do, because this whole kit and caboodle is on its way to Las Vegas tomorrow night. We're going to cover 4 days of the National Association of Broadcasters show, the NAB show in Las Vegas.
It's going to be great.
Scott, you and I are going to do Home Theater Geeks, your home theater show.
Yep.
And we're going to wander the floor. Who are we going to talk to?
Well, we're going to talk to, I got four companies lined up. I've got Canon.
Yay.
And Panasonic.
Okay.
JVC and Sony.
Now, Canon doesn't make TVs. They make cameras.
Correct. Now, the reason I lined them up is I heard a rumor. And in fact, I'm going to a special screening on Sunday night. The rumor, which I have not been able to confirm, I hope it's true, and maybe I'm talking out of the side of my hat here,
but
is that they are going to be announcing a 4K video DSLR.
Oh, no, that's more than a rumor. I think that's the fact, Jack.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well.
So that means, and it's not going to be expensive. This is the new 1D, right?
I don't know even know what the model number is. I tried to ask Canon, you know,
They're
if it was true, and they said, we can neither confirm nor deny. No,
we will be covering it. This is very...
I think
now,
it's
why
very
is that important?
Exciting.
Would you explain to everybody what that means?
Well, sure. It's basically now you've got DSLR cameras, you know, basically still cameras that can also shoot video at high definition, which we call 1080p, which has a pixel resolution of 1920 across by 1080 down.
Right.
And that's plenty high definition. That's what we see in high def TV. It's what Blu-ray is. But everyone is talking about and wanting what's called 4K, which is four times that much resolution, that many pixels. It's about roughly 4,000, 4096 across by 2160 down.
Mm.
And there are several professional cameras that are now shooting at 4K or higher. The Red camera, which is being used by Peter Jackson to film The Hobbit.
Right.
Sony has a 4K
he
camera.
How many did he buy? He has like hundreds.
Yeah, he's got hundreds. And they weren't, I mean,
they're,
you know,
so
they're
cheap.
Expensive.
He could buy, they're 30 grand.
They are.
But big deal.
You know.
That's so cheap compared to the typical movie camera.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the pros are starting to use it. We're starting to, I think we're going to start seeing 4K presentations in commercial cinemas. Sony makes a 4K projector, which, in fact, every one of the 16 theaters in my AMC here in Burbank, California, has a Sony 4K projector.
How does it compare to, so this is for digital projection. How
Correct.
Does it compare to film projectors? Is it higher resolution than film?
You know, 4K... The way that you establish what the resolution of film is a little tricky, because film consists of these tiny little grains of photoreactive stuff.
Right.
on a plastic piece of film.
Right.
And so ultimately, I guess the resolution of film is how many of these little grains there are. But the grains are of uneven size and shape. You know, they're like little tiny grains of sand, mm-hmm. really tiny. Mm-hmm. But most people would say that somewhere between 4 and 8K is the effective resolution of film.
So this might look as good as film, not quite.
I think it'll look better. I think current digital 2K, myself, I personally prefer looking at that over film. Not necessarily so much for the resolution, although the resolution is fine. I have sitting in a big theater at the right distance from the screen, I can't see pixels at 2K. Right. But the image is so much more stable,
right?
And there aren't the real change markers up in the upper right corner every 20 minutes, which, you know, once you start seeing them, you can't not see them.
Right.
So now we're going to start seeing 4K displays for the home. We already have one in the Sony VPL-VW1000ES projector. It's a true 4K home projector. It's $25,000. But it indicates the future. Now the big problem is content. The studios aren't about to start releasing 4K. You know, you'll need a new Blu-ray format to have a 4K disc. Mm-hmm. Downloading real 4K content would take forever,
right.
At least at the bandwidth most people have. So the only place you're going to get real true 4K content, at least for several years, is if you make it yourself.
Right.
Now, digital still cameras are 4K, well beyond 4K. You know, they're...
But they're single images.
Images, right. So can you shoot 4K content? Well, if you're Peter Jackson and you have $30,000, you can buy a Red.
Right.
Or maybe after next week, we'll know that Canon makes a digital SLR still camera that shoots video at 4K.
So we will have that information, and we'll talk about it next week, too, when we get back into the studio. But this is very intriguing. Now,
very intriguing.
One more thing before we break. You saw Titanic 3D.
I did.
Titanic sank 100 years ago this week, so it is the 100th anniversary.
Today is the 100th anniversary, April 14th, I believe. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I think that's true.
So yes, they re-released Titanic, and James Cameron, did he supervise the 3D conversion?
Oh, yeah.
Because it wasn't shot in 3D.
No, it wasn't. It was released originally in 1997.
It's been that 2D. Long? Wow.
Yeah,
15 years ago. Wow.
And so I felt it was my responsibility to go see it, to report on it, because, right. You know, I mean, that's what I do. And I wasn't necessarily looking forward to it, especially after Star Wars was such a disaster in 3D.
It was? Oh, I didn't see it.
I thought it was terrible.
Okay.
I thought it was just terrible.
A bad conversion.
And I'd heard rumors that this was similarly bad, being essentially not much of a conversion at all. Star Wars, you could hardly tell it was in 3D at all. Well, I was wrong. Titanic conversion is actually very good. And really? I was surprised at that. And yet, I'm not as surprised because James Cameron, of course, is a big 3D promoter.
Right.
He's a 3D pioneer. He really wants it to succeed. So he took the time and the money to do it right. Now, it's not perfect. There is something of what I call the cardboard cutout effect.
Right.
Right? So you see...
It looks like a 2D object.
Object, and then another 2D object behind it.
Right.
So there is that. But he did it right in that most of the depth of the 3D is behind the screen plane. Right, so it recedes into the background. There isn't much that comes forward of the screen, except, say, for example, if somebody's talking to somebody else, you see the person who's talking is the main thing in the shot, and the person they're talking to is way off to the side, and you see kind of the side of their head, which is in front of the screen plane. But this is one of the techniques that you want to follow when you're doing 3D, is to not have a lot of stuff way in front of the screen plane, except possibly off to the side. And so Cameron did that correctly.
All right.
So, you know, I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought I would be fidgeting, you know, just terribly at the end of 3 hours, but I wasn't. It was fun.
Scott Wilkinson, we'll see you in Vegas for the NAB show. Scott's going to also fill in for me. I'll give you details on that in a couple of weeks. But right now we get back to the phones after this break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
A little Titanic theme there. Are you getting on the boat, Blatty? Hee-haw! 88, 88,
Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. Scott will be filling in for me in a couple of weeks. So let me think. I got to just look at my calendar here. Next week, during the week, we're going to be at the NAB show. I'll be back in studio on the 21st and 22nd. And we'll have some reports from the NAB show about these cameras and so forth. Very excited about that. The following day, the 23rd, I fly to Norway for a photography festival, a Nordic Light Festival, and I'll be there the following weekend. So Scott's going to be doing home theater and answering all your home theater questions. So get those questions lined up, not next weekend, but the weekend after, the 28th and the 29th of April. You get Scott all day. So, and I know he's done this before, and I know you love it, so we're thrilled. Thank you, Scott. Back to the phones now. And Michael in San Diego, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Leo Laporte here. What can I do for you?
Hey, Leo. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, sir.
I have recently switched over to the dark side, as my friends say, and have gone completely Mac with the iPhone, the iPad, and recently a MacBook Air.
Wow.
And I noticed that it's extremely easy to stream video on my iPad without having to download anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have that same ease of use with the MacBook Air. Safari, when I go to a website, it wants to download the video rather than just stream it. And I was right. wondering if there's a setting that I'm missing.
What sites, for instance?
NBC News or ABC News, their video sections.
I would guess, let me just see, NBCnews.com. What's happening when you go on an iPad is the sites are saying, oh, wait a minute.
No, it's the MacBook Air. That's
I know,
giving me the-
I know. Okay. When you go on an iPad, the sites are saying, oh, wait a minute. There's no flash support on this device.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to deliver what we call HTML5 video. HTML is the web interface. And yes. HTML5 is the future of video. And in fact, if it weren't for Apple saying, we're not going to support Flash on iOS, I don't think it'd be so far along. So this is good. And by the way, that's supported on Safari, but the problem on the desktop, but the problem is when you go on the desktop, you have, it says, oh, wait a minute, they can do Flash. So don't bother with the HTML5. Let's play Flash. And that means now you have to have, make sure your Flash is installed. So my guess, my best guess is that that's all that's wrong here, is that you just haven't, it's not installed by default. Apple would love it if sites would do the same thing on the desktop that they do on the iOS devices. But sites, if they can avoid it, tend to go with what they already know.
Sure.
So what you do is you go and you get Flash and you install it. The best way to do this, I would say, would be to close all your browsers and well, actually, before you go to close all your browsers, go to Get Flash. I think it's get.flash.com. And download what I like to do. I prefer, you can install in browser, but what I prefer to do is download a standalone installer and install it with the browsers closed. So get, let me just make sure this works, get.flash, used to, but you never know, .com. No, it doesn't work. So let's just try flash.com. It's an Adobe site. Yeah, flash.com works. It's an Adobe site. What you'll want to do is then download it. So you'll look for the download link on here and download an installer for the Mac. So it's okay. Over on the right. It says get Adobe Flash Player. And that's what you want, by the way. Not the Flash Creator, but the Flash Player. And you download that standalone. Now you close your browsers and you install it as if you're installing an application. That's the best way to do it because when the browser's running, it's hard for Flash to get installed. So this, you know, this isn't a necessary system, but it does work better to do it that way. So there's a long, it's get.adobe.com/flashplayer is the address. But if you Google download Flash, you'll get, what you want to do is download not the Flash Creator, but the Flash Player. It's good to have that around. Then close browsers, and that will install it on all your browsers. So if you have Chrome or some other browser, Opera, installed on your computer, it'll install from. I think that's all you need to do. I think the reason it's trying to download it is because it doesn't have Flash. It should tell you it doesn't have Flash. It seems odd that it didn't. Now, Angie in Riverside. Hi, Angie.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
What can I do for you?
I have the website, and we bought the mobile version, which, of course, is easy thing to do because it's like, you know, it was cheap, $150 to get it mobile because you've already got the website, right?
Great.
So what I don't understand is when we want to make any changes to it, why it's going to cost so much and take so much time.
How much?
So this is it. So my website, say it has, you know, it already has the tabs, or say it's a newsfeed item. I want the newsfeed's not on the mobile version. So they're saying just to add the newsfeed, it's going to take a day of, you know, say tech stuff, and then 2 days to put it on the iPhone, and then additional 2 days for the Droid. So that's 5 days worth of work, $1,000. Then the other item that I wanted to add is, say, our calendar section. Same thing.
Oh, this
one,
you know,
day be for them, 2 days iPhone, 2 days Droid, another $1,000.
It may actually be appropriate expense. I mean, I spent $100,000 on my website, so $2,000 sounds cheap to me. But who is it that's doing your site? And first give me your site. What is your site? Can I put it on the air?
Yeah, it's we just started. It's called motomingle.com.
MOTOMINGLE.com?
Yeah, Motomingle. It's like social network for people in motocross and off-road and stuff like that.
That's great. Now, who's doing this site? Is this...
The site we bought it through, we bought the regular, you know, our website version through Skadate. So it's kind of a dating social network, you know.
So you're riding on top of their social platform.
Right, right. So we bought their package, and then they have to, they subbed it out to SOD technology, which is the web version. So any problem that we have for the web version, we have to deal with them. And they're the ones saying this, which I don't understand, like I said. Plus, you know, there's other small issues on the web version that I haven't even talked to them about, because now I'm afraid.
How customized was your site? Was it kind of off the rack?
Yeah, it's basically a cookie cutter. They gave us the site, and all we did was put in our pictures and add a couple little things of you know, customizing it to say, okay, what kind of bike do you ride? Do you ride ATV? Do you ride motocross? You know, dirt bike, quads, sand buggies, you know, those kind of things, which is basic. You know, so that's where I don't get, because obviously I'm not a tech person.
Well,
but when I'm on the
here's,
back end
here's
of the
deal. Site, we spent $5,000 to mobilize our site. And it's okay. Really how many hours it's going to take an engineer to make these changes. Now, if it's a cookie-cutter site, then they presumably have a cookie-cutter mobile site, and that's why it was so cheap to go mobile. But if you start adding stuff that doesn't fit into the existing templates, then an engineer has to hand-code it, and $2,000 does not sound out of the ordinary. I hate to tell you. When we come back, we're going to take a break for news. Let's talk about web design and why it's so expensive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. And yes, digital photography too. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536, anywhere from the U.S., toll free. And if you want to call outside the U.S., just use that Skype out thing that you love so well, and it'll make a free call. We were talking about web design and why it's so darn expensive. Angie said, you know, I have a great site, and, you know, it cost us just a little bit of money to mobilize it. But now, because we want to add some pages, they say it's going to cost a couple of grand to add those pages. And you'll forgive me if I'm not super sympathetic, because I pay a lot of money for web design. We're redoing the Tech Guy site. And, you know, it's a good designer, good programmers, all of that cost money. Generally, there are two ways to pay them. You can pay them by the hour, or you can pay them by the project. Most designers will want to be paid by the hour, but, boy, that number can go up fast. And it's not unreasonable to say, you know, a good website might cost tens of thousands of dollars. We'll be the Tech Guy Lab site. I think our quote was around $60,000 for the first phase. $60,000. Now, it's going to be a great site, but it's expensive. And you can do it all for $5, too. You can do it for free. if you, you know, use something like Squarespace.com or WordPress.com, you could do your own designing using plugins and so forth. So there is a very, very wide range of cost, from free to a lot, to an off. And I'm, by the way, I know it sounds like a lot, I'm getting away cheap. If you look at, you know, big companies and big websites that are very popular, they spend even more on design, on programming, on custom engineering. Engineers cost money. These are long projects. They take months. So it's almost impossible to say, is it worth $2,000? I think that it sounds like, Angie, they gave you a fair quote. They said, well, it's going to take this many hours to do this, this many hours to do this, and this is what it costs. And it sounds like it's fair, but there's really no way to judge. You can. The problem is you're stuck now because you decided to go with the company, and they have the website. They control it. And so you have to use whatever they tell you to do. You're not doing it by hand. You're not doing it with a local, you know, college kid. You're using a company, and this is what they tell you. Your choice is to shut, and it's unfortunate, this is often the case, is shut down the site, walk away and go somewhere else, or accept what they tell you, which is unfortunate, but that's the way it is. Now, I wish there were a way I could say, now, here's how you do it, here's how much it should cost. There isn't. It really varies. If you, in future, if you want to have more control over your costs, it'll take more of your energy and time. You'll need to, for instance, get your own server. Go to a company. This is what we use, a company called SoftLayer. They're out of Dallas. And you basically, you rent a machine in their network operations center and connectivity to that machine. And they say, there, do whatever you want with it. Then you get on that machine and you install software, or you have an expert do that. You install a content management system like WordPress. We use Drupal, Joomla. There are a lot of those. And you know, you run it, and you're responsible for keeping it secure. You're responsible for keeping it safe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the issue really is, it really comes down to how much you want to do, how much independence you want. I don't think, to be honest, $2,000 is that much. I know it's scary. And your only option, since you've already kind of signed up for this company, is to walk, not do it, or to bite the bullet and pay the money. And I wish I could say, oh, no, here's how you do it. You go to Elance.com. You hire a guy. He's $25 an hour. This should be 12 hours. That's how much it should cost. But it's not that simple. It really isn't. Jerry in Charlevoix, it's Michigan. I bet it's not pronounced Charlevoix. I bet it's pronounced Charlevoix. How is it pronounced?
Charlevoix.
Charlevoix. All right. Charlevoix. I've learned that Michigan names, you never really can be sure.
Yeah. We have a special culture that allows us to really mess with your mind.
Charlevoix. I'll remember that. How are you, Jerry? Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Well, Leo, first off, I'm so glad I found your show. I used to watch you years ago when we were starting our own computer brand, and you were on TV. Used to watch you, and it was a real thrill to be able to find that you're back on the air again. So the first thing I did was automatically put you into my phone so I could put you into my contact list.
But, well, I never really left the air, Jerry, but I've just been floating around. Let's put it that way. So I'm glad you found me.
Yeah. Well, excellent. You were making comments about Google Plus, and they say they got, you know, 170 million users, and I got, you know, I had no problem with Google. I love Google. They're you know, and you might as well, because they're going to run the world pretty soon.
It seems like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, seriously, they're on the right track, and as long as they don't lose their focus of what they are, so they can change, I see no reason to
I agree
to
with you.
That.
That's a very good way to put it, is as long as they don't lose focus.
Yeah, well, let me take a look at, you know, the computer companies in our past that people have no idea who DEC is or anything
right.
like
That's
that
right.
because you lose your focus. And anyways, as far as Google Plus, you know, Google is, first off, you know, Android, our company sells a ton of our own Android tablets, and every single one we personalize
We get on their forums. We find out what their Google. You get them a Google Gmail address. Get them set up so that they don't have to go and worry about, you know, what is this play and things like. Just in case they're not familiar with the device, Google pretty much makes it to where unless you want to be pestered to your grave, you have to sign up on Google Plus.
They basically they give you the choice, but they'll ask you again and again and again.
It's like a 3-year-old that just found out there's a Zoom account.
Well, and you know, this is like Mark Zuckerberg saying the world is better if you share. Google's saying Google's better if you join Google Plus.
Well, and you have to join Google Plus or be completely annoyed with all the you know,
that's
the
right.
requests to join. So pretty much, you know I got a whole customer base, thousands of people that are Google Plus people. But I gotta refrain from saying users because they're all using Facebook and they just don't need.
They never use it. Exactly.
The confusion of they're beginning to realize that this is it can seriously form an addiction almost to being on a social networking site and you know one more social networking site is just confusing how many more places they have to post this, comment this, follow you know thoughts and on that and so. They might very well have, 170 million users, but that's kind of like the, you know, a church baptizing infants,
right.
you know, and saying, we've got these many members. You know, are they aware of it?
Larry Page, who celebrated his first year as CEO last week, is saying, we're very happy with the growth. But the truth is, I think you hit the nail on the head, Jerry. The growth is forced because if you want to play in the Google space, which everybody needs to, because it's the search engine, you kind of have to join Google+. 9 months old, 170 million users. But how many of them, I mean, 170 million people who have accounts, but as you point out, how many of them actually use it? And it's my sense that a very, very small fraction of that number actually use it. I like Google Plus, but I worry about Google not merely losing its focus, but straying away from doing what it does best, which is search. Thanks for the call, Jerry. Great to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You could come to we're going to the zoo.
Yippee-dee-ba-doo.
See the elephant with a long trunk swinging, great big ears and long trunk swinging.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our musical director, Kyle Benham. That's who to blame. Kyle Benham. Let me make that perfectly clear. Joe is in New York. He's got flashback. Hi, Joe.
How you doing, Leo?
I am.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. So you got the flashback Trojan, huh?
I'm not. No, I caught the tail end of it, and my newer Macs, all of my Macs have Safari. And they're 2, 3, and 4 years old.
Yep.
And the newer one got the update, got the patch from Apple.
Right.
Downloaded, everything was
good,
all right.
Good. Yeah.
The middle one, I think it did it by itself. I didn't notice it. The one that's like 4 years old, I'm on Safari 4.13 on that one. And that's a MacBook, 10.4.11.
Okay.
So that's maybe a little too old to get the patch. I'm not sure. People are telling me go to Firefox, and that would be safer.
First of all, Flash. Let's talk a little bit about this. Flashback, which is a Macintosh Trojan horse / virus. It's malware that has been out since last fall and has now infected, according to last count, over 600,000 machines. Mostly in the U.S., 57% in the U.S., most of the rest in Canada, then a small number in Australia and other countries. Flashback did not take advantage of your browser. There are browser holes, but that's not how Flashback worked. You need to patch right now. Well, originally the way it worked was by tricking you, by getting you to install what they said was a updated version of Flash. That's why it was called Flashback. That's when it was a Trojan. More
okay.
recently, it's taken advantage of a flaw in Java. And the sad thing is Apple does its own Java. Not JavaScript, but Java. It's a programming language that has been around for a long time, designed to run on the web for the most part. And
this took advantage of a flaw in Java. So you would go to a web page, an infected web page, which would then run some JavaScript in your browser, which would then download the bad guy using a hole in Java.
I would have seen that if that happened.
It would happen in Firefox, it would happen in Safari, and you would not see it. So what you need to do is make sure that you get the update. Now, Oracle, who owns Java, updated Java for this in February. The problem is Apple does its own thing. So we had to wait till Apple put out the update. There is a new update. They did one last week that fixed the hole. They have a new one. It's Java for OS X 2012-003, and this not only fixes the hole, but removes, it says, most common variants of the flashback malware. It also disables auto execution of Java applets, which will help keep you safe in future.
Okay.
So what you need to do, and this should this should install on all your computers, so including the OS 10 10.4, that's fine. So what you do is under the Apple where it says software update, and everybody who has a Mac should do this. Run software update right now. You will almost undoubtedly get an update because this is a new one. They put out two to date. Make sure you install that. That's all you have to do, and you'll be safe.
Okay, so I did one yesterday. You're saying there's another one today?
I think if you did one yesterday, that's the one. They did one Wednesday of last week, and then they did one yesterday. So you're do that. Make sure all your machines have it. And it's simple. Just run software update, and if it says there's no updates, you'd got it.
What about switching Safari for Firefox?
Doesn't matter.
I mean, I'm comfortable with Safari, but I'm hearing from everybody, WordPress works better. Everything works better they're saying Firefox.
That's not my experience. I don't use Firefox on the Mac. I use Chrome sometimes, and I use Safari most of the time.
Yeah, that's what they came with, Safari.
Yeah.
So the one I have is the oldest one. That will get the update. It should be okay.
Yeah, because you're not updating Safari. You're updating the Mac itself.
And I would know it if I was unloading something and putting it on.
Well, that's the problem with the way it was working. The first way it was working would ask you to install new Flash, and if you were smart enough to say no, or you were running something called Little Snitch, or you had security software on there, you know, our sponsor is ESET's Nod 32. Actually, it's called Cybersecure for the Mac. It would detect it. But if you didn't have anything, and you ran the Flash updater, you'd be infected. More recently, if you didn't have anything, you wouldn't even know. It would do it transparently without your knowledge. Now, somebody, Web1574 in the chat room, saying the web update does not work on Tiger, which is 10.4. PowerPC, I understand, but if they don't support Tiger, that's kind of bad. I'll have to look and see what the Apple, the tech note on this one. If you want to know more about the most recent update, is Knowledge Base article HT, as in Tom, 5242. HT5242. If they don't, you know, I don't know what, I mean, it's possible, knowing Apple, that they aren't supporting, the one I just got was for Lion. So that's the one for Lion. It is the case you probably do want with Apple to have the most recent. But if you have an older machine, you may not be able to update that. Boy, that would be frustrating if they don't update Tiger. This happens all the time. Let's see here. Products affected. 10.4 is affected. Now, they have an update for Tiger. This security update does, in fact, go to Tiger. So you should be all right. Yeah, if you don't have any security updates, you're okay. You got it, in other words. It is, I think that the problem really is that, and this is happening with Microsoft too, you know, Windows Vista is no longer supported by Microsoft. Operating systems get old. There's no reason why a company couldn't continue to support older operating systems, but it just costs the money to do so, and they want you to get the new stuff for a lot of reasons. Security is a big one. So if you're still on Tiger, you probably should update. Apple does not make it expensive. You should get the latest version that'll run on your hardware. I think you're probably getting updated. It's hard for me to tell from this, but it does say products affected Mac OS X 10.4. And are they providing an update for you? I'm not sure.
You know what this is great? They will show you on this page. If you go to security updates, HT1222, and then Apple Knowledge Base at support.apple.com, they'll show you the latest versions and the security updates for all the versions, all the different software. And which versions are being updated. I would hope they're updating that. Joe, you should probably get up to Leopard if you can. Snow Leopard or Lion if you can. The more recent, the better. The more likely you'll be supported. And if you're running, good news, Windows XP is going to get another 2 years. For some reason, Vista has run out of time. But Windows XP, I guess so many people use Windows XP. Microsoft has announced that they're going to keep the updates coming, the security updates anyway, coming for Windows XP for another 2 years. And if you're a business user, you probably want to upgrade pretty soon. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Everybody down. Do the flash dance. Or the flashback dance. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about this Mac virus. The age of innocence is over for Macintosh users. This virus has infected 600,000 machines. That's appalling. And part of the reason it's infected so many machines is because Apple has been so slow to fix Java. After doing some checks, the chat room has been very helpful on this. It does turn out that, in fact, your Java will not be updated on older versions of OS X, including Tiger. In fact, you need to, I think even Leopard, you need to go to Snow Leopard. Or, and here's the really good fix, take Java off your system. Don't use Java. Delete Java. You probably don't need it. There are very few sites now that use Java anymore. And in fact, Apple no longer distributes Java with the Macintosh. It's one of the reasons they probably didn't want to update it or were slow to update it. They don't think you needed Java either. So if you disable Java or turn it off or delete it, you're better off. You bet off. You don't need that. If you don't use Java applets, you disable the Java web plugin in your browser. I'll give you a link. It's back to the knowledge base. HT5241. This is Java Apple's knowledge base. And I'll put a link on the show notes. That's what I'll do. To how to disable Java in your Safari browser. Then you won't see it anymore. It won't happen. It's pretty simple. You go to the security tab in your preferences, and there's an enable Java plugin. Just uncheck it. It's off by default. So you shouldn't have to worry about it so much. Just turn that off, and you'll never have to worry again. That's if you use Safari. If you use other browsers, there's a similar check-in. Check a box that you can disable. Truth is, if you really want to be safe, disable JavaScript too. However, most sites will stop working. So I would say, certainly disable Java unless you know you need it. Then you don't have to worry about the update so much. I guess that was Apple's point of view. Why are they using Java? Rob is in Tarzana, California. He's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Leo, had to take you off the speakerphone there.
That's good.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I've got a question, and here it is. I come home, I have a landline phone, and I often miss calls. I fail to pick up the phone and realize that there's a flashing dial tone from the phone company. I use their voicemail.
Right.
And I want to know if there's a solution available in which I can either ideally hear a beep, like something beeping like the old answering machines, used to beep until you'd pick up your messages from
right.
them, or at least a visual sight like a flashing light. If not, I'd prefer an audio.
So what you're saying is it's not enough. When you pick up the phone, you get do-do-do-do-do, and that's, you want more than that. You want a blinking light on top of your phone, something like that.
Either a blinking light or, even better, a noise, an audio noise to tell me, hey, there's a message waiting for you.
Boy, I don't know. That's an interesting. I would call the phone company and see. I mean, it's going to have to be something, a phone perhaps, that will sense that
high-pitched dial tone. And I don't know how the phone company can send you that information otherwise. You know, my suggestion, frankly, is to get an answering machine. I stopped using the phone. I know it's kind of convenient that the phone company's voicemail and all that. But I like having an answering machine. And certainly you can have a blinking light on. Most answering machines will let you know you've missed a call. But Crimson is Crimson says in our chat room, my wall phone has a red blinking light when I have voicemail. And are you using the telephone company's voicemail system? Then what I would do is call the phone company, say, hey, I need one of them old Western Electric phones with a light on it. I'm sure the phone company will tell you if there are such things. Panasonic phones always alert, even phone company, even VoIP. Okay. Radio Shack, says Lenny, had a little box or a phone that had an alert. So I guess what it is there are phones that can sense this. Crimson has a VTech 900 digital. That's actually a good cordless phone. And Archandra, here's the best answer in our chat room, says you need to find out if your telephone service provider supports a standard called VMMI, Visual Message Waiting Indicator. If they send a VMMI signal down the line, then your phone will recognize it and blink if it has that capability. So that's, I would guess, if you're AT&T or Verizon, and I'm sure you're one or the other, that they will support that. So there's a few. Panasonic cordless does VMWI. The VTech supports VMWI. Look for a phone that says VMWI on it. I bet you when you plug it in, it'll just work. That's it. That's a great question. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it, Rob. I haven't heard that one in a while. Now we got Mark. Syracuse, New York. iDoc Mark, my personal optician. Hello. Good to talk to you, Mark.
Thanks. My daughter's doing what your daughter did. She's going to Europe for a school year, next school year. She's going to be doing 11th grade in Germany.
Wow. That is great.
Yeah, we're a little hesitant, but, you know.
Oh, it's terrifying. Are you kidding? One of the saddest days of my life is the day we brought her to the airport for her junior year in high school in France, and we said goodbye to her. We just didn't expect it to happen that soon. But I have to say, it changed her life.
I don't know which is worse. She got her learner's permit last week. That might be
That's
worse.
Bad, too. I cried when that happened, too.
Yep.
They grow up so fast. Say again?
She has an iPhone 4, and I have an iPhone 4S. We're a Verizon family. I'm told the Verizon iPhone 4 will not work in Europe.
No, well, it's a CDMA phone. The 4S will. Verizon will let you put a chip in it. But the best thing you could do, I would suggest, is getting an unlocked phone, an unlocked GSM
iPhone,
phone.
Or do we have to go back to
it
an
It can
Android?
Be an iPhone. You'll have to buy it. Apple sells them. They're a little more expensive. Then when she gets to Germany, you're not going to pay for a year of roaming. So when she gets to Germany, she will pop in a SIM for that iPhone that will give her a German phone number, German data. It'll be much less expensive.
Oh, that's easy.
She could also get the phone when she gets to Germany. She could go to a German phone store and get the phone there.
They'll let a minor do that?
I don't know. Her family will do it for her. She's with the host family, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing a host family does.
Okay, that was easy.
Yeah, I think with Abby, what we did with my daughter is I had a Nokia phone that was unlocked. If you have an unlocked GSM phone, and I have lots of them, I think I'm trying to remember. Did she take that? I don't remember, but I think that's what we did. Yes, she did. She had an unlocked Nokia phone, and then she ended up, you know what happened? I think she ended up buying a phone in France. They have cheap burner phones that have French phone numbers. Nobody was interesting, and I bet you this is the same in Germany. Nobody, because cell calls are so expensive, nobody made cell calls. Mostly they texted each other. It was a text plan that really made, that was the most useful for her. And so that way it can be very affordable. But even in France, and I bet you it's the same in Germany, it was very expensive to make even in-country cell phone calls. So everybody texted. 88, thank you, Mark. Good to talk to you. 8888 Ask Leo. We continue with your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. By the way, as would be expected, once this flaw in Java was discovered, there are more viruses coming towards the Mac environment. Sophos has discovered one called SABPAB. Doesn't matter. The name's not important. SABPAB. And it uses exactly the same flaw in Java to install itself. So it's a backdoor Trojan horse, that's the technical term, which exploits a drive-by Java vulnerability. Don't you love how they talk? Let me explain what that means. If you have Java turned on your system and you haven't updated your Java, then an infected website, which can often be established, well-known websites, can use JavaScript, which is not related, just similarly named, on your browser to install this flaw and take over your system. Generally, what they do when they take over your system is log you into a command and control center, a botnet it's called, that your system is set up to log into without your knowledge. None of this will appear to happen on the screen. You won't be aware of any of it. Your system just logs into this botnet and says, what is thy command, O my master? And waits. And then the idea is the hacker can either sell these systems, these compromised systems, to the highest bidder, who will then use it to relay spam or attack other systems. Look, nowadays all viruses are about making money. And generally speaking, the hacker will sell these compromised machines to people who want to use them either to relay spam, that's one way to make money, or to use these machines to target other systems, to take down websites. Generally, what they do is blackmail websites. They say, hey, if you don't pay us, we're going to take your system down. It's very common to do this, for instance, to gambling sites the day before the big game, when all the bets will be coming in, right, on the Super Bowl or the Kentucky Derby. That's what's the next one, right? May's coming up. In fact, you're going to start to see a lot of activity like this, because what they'll do is they'll go to a gambling site where you can bet on the horses and say, it would be a shame if come Kentucky Derby Day your website would to be unavailable. We can protect you from this eventuality if you give us $1 million. And the veiled threat is we've got a botnet with hundreds of thousands of machines ready to all head to your site at the same time, which will bring your site down. So that's what's going on. 600,000 Macs attacked, or infected, I should say, with Flashback. Now, the good news is security researchers have found the sites that these Flashback-infected machines would log into. I think all the botnets have been brought down, so the chances are nothing bad is happening. But this new one, same thing, maybe even written by the same guys, the SABPAB. Maybe it's trying to take advantage of this. Kentucky Derby's coming up. We need some machines here. 600,000 machines has nothing compared to the millions on Windows that are taken over. So don't, nobody should be patting themselves on the back at this point. Turn off Java if you don't need it. That's really the best advice. All right, when we come back, Claudia and Fontana, who needs help getting into our chat room. Oh, Claudia, I can help you. We have lots of smart people in the chat room who can help you, too. Claudia and Fontana, you want to get in our chat room, huh?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Leo, huge fan. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Claudia.
I'm addicted to Twitch TV, by the way.
That's our podcast network. This is part of it, but we have 30 shows all week long. I do 12.
Yes, I just started streaming a couple months ago and entering the chat room while you're on the air. And I wish I could join the chat room right now because I'm sure they would have been able to help me also, but I can't enter the
That's
chat
true.
Room.
That's true. You can't get help from the chat room until you're in the chat room. So you know that
exactly.
If you go to Tech Guy Labs, for instance, that we have a link to the chat room. You could go on any browser to, this is the actual website, irc.twit.tv. Now, this is just a web interface, but you don't have to use it. You can use an IRC client as well, because that's the kind of chat we have. Internet Relay Chat is IRC. This thing's older than the web. IRC has been around since the beginning. So,
okay,
are you on a Mac or are you on a PC?
PC. 13. I'm running Windows 7. That page that you have up right now, irc.twit.tv,
yeah,
it loads, except it's, I see everything that you're showing right now except the connect to Twit, and then, you know, where it says nickname. And
you don't get this form right here where it says
exactly
what's your nickname. And you know, you would type in Claudia. Actually, don't use a girl name. This is, I hate to say it, and you may already know this, Claudia. It's too bad, but unfortunately, women should probably use gender, non-specific gender names. It's just a little bit safer. In our chat room is a little different because our chat room is heavily moderated. But, you know, you could use, Twit Fan or something. Use Claudia. That's fine with me. And then you choose the channel, which is Twit Live, and then you press connect. Now, you don't see this, though.
No, I don't. And on your other site, the Twit TV, you know how under the screen where where I can see you, it used to show, I think it said pop-out chat?
Yeah. You don't have that either,
yeah,
huh?
I don't have that either.
So this is almost certainly a security client, a security program that's blocking this. Have you recently installed anything like that?
No, the only thing is I was streaming and I was listening to the chat room last weekend, and I closed my laptop without turning everything off. And several hours later, when I came back to it, I noticed everything was locked up, and all I did was a reboot, and I could enter Twit. I could open up web pages, and I just lost the ability to see that screen.
So all of this just happened after the crash?
Yeah.
It sounds, I mean, these both of these, the pop out chat and the chat on the irc.twit.tv, are heavily using something called JavaScript. And
okay.
I'm wondering if something is, normally I would say what I did, which is, well, JavaScript's being blocked by security, like if you ran NoScript software or something like that, or you install a security program on there, it might block it by being overly aggressive if it does. But you're saying this, none of that happened. You just, the crash was the thing that happened.
Correct. And I haven't updated Java myself, so I was getting nervous.
A lot of people confuse Java with JavaScript. We do not use Java. We use JavaScript. So JavaScript is built into your browser. What browser are you using?
Now I'm using Chrome.
Okay. Huh.
I used to use Firefox, and I tried it with Firefox to see, and it's
same problem?
The same. Yeah.
Boy, that's a really interesting question. It sounds
really?
Like it's not related to the crash, that something else is going on.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure. Have you tried IE with it, just out of curiosity?
I haven't. I stay away from IE.
Oh, good. I'm proud of you, Claudia.
I listen to you.
I'm watching the chat room here and seeing what they're saying, and they're repeating many of things I'm saying. Tell you what, Claudia, keep watching. I know you're watching the live stream. We'll solve this problem. I'm glad you want to get in. If you want to get in, go to my website, techguylabs.com. More to come right after this.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks, Claudia. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, hour number 3 of the Tech Guy Show. And the good news, if you were listening in the last hour, our last caller of the last hour was Claudia, who couldn't get into our chat room. And, you know, I could have told her a program she could use or, you know, some other way, but I was concerned because, well, it sounded like something was wrong with her browser. She said it happened when she crashed, but in fact, she went and checked her browser settings and pop-ups were being blocked, which is something you normally want. So what I would suggest, she said she's using Chrome. Chrome will block pop-ups, but when it does, it gives you, it's hard to see sometimes. It'll give you a little warning up in the address bar. It'll say, I blocked a pop-up. If you click that, you can give it permission to unblock pop-ups. Those are those windows that pop up on the screen unwanted. To unblock pop-ups for that particular site. And sometimes you do want pop-ups. In this case, she wanted the chat window to pop out from one of our sites. Chrome was blocking it. So the best thing, don't turn off pop-up blocking because, you know, still don't want pop-ups on other sites. But what you should do
when you click something and nothing happens is check in Chrome up there at the top in the address bar to see if it's blocked something. If it has, you can say, yeah, on this site it's okay. Or you could say, just this once. And that's a good way to do it. Kurt in La Habra, California. You're next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, sir. I've talked to you before about a problem with Juno, which is actually something happened that I was able to get back on with my mail.
So. Oh, I'm relieved to hear that. Although, if I were you, I would start looking for an alternative.
I did, but I had a problem making it work. So I could look at the mail, but I couldn't send out mail. So, like on Thunderbird. So I'm looking for a product or a database that I can put my CD-ROMs and DVDs that I use for basically collecting books and radio shows in that will tell me what's, you know, that will take what's on the disk and put it in a database so that I can look at the database and say, okay, here's the book and it's on this disk. And I'm looking for a program that will do that.
And the CD-ROMs are containing what kinds of files? MP3s?
MP3s, yeah. Basically, they're all MP3s.
So what you'd like is some program that you run on your system, you insert the CDs, it catalogs the MP3s in there, you eject it, you do another one, you do another one, you do another one, and then at the end of the day, you have a database, and when you want to find a cut, you just go to that database, it'll say, oh, that's CD34.
Right. That's what I'm looking for, yes.
All right. I think there are quite a few things that'll do this. I'm going to ask the chat room for some suggestions. One that's already come in is Collectors with a Z, collectorz.com.
And they
make a series of programs that do exactly what I just described. I haven't used it, so I don't know. Catalog your collection in no time. Movies, books, music. The good news is you could download them and try them for a while just to see if it'll do what you want. I suspect there are some other ones as well. Windows or Mac?
Windows.
See, Collectors looks like you might have to hand enter that. That wouldn't be any fun. Garby says he uses the Comic Collectors app, and it's very nice. Will Media Monkey do this? I'm asking the chat room because they're so much smarter than I am.
Right, yeah.
Media Monkey is a very nice Windows program that basically takes the place of iTunes in terms of, you know, managing your music. And those MP3s, it doesn't matter if they're music or spoken word. It treats them the same.
Right. Yeah, see, because the thing is, I mean, I know I have stuff, but I with my wonderful system, I cannot find.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. This is a classic problem in computing. It's called offline storage.
Yes.
And instead of having it be online, which would be on a hard drive that's attached to the computer and visible, you have somewhere in the closet. You have a rack of CDs, and what you need to do is say, well, which CD is this book on?
Yep. That's what I'm looking for.
And it is a classic problem in computing.
Well, is it MediaMonkey.com then?
Yeah, that's free. Collectors with a Z has an MP3 collectors. I'd take a look at that. Here's one that's free that does do the scanning. Digion in our chat room is suggesting it. It is a open source program, which is nice because presumably that means it's going to be, people are keeping it up to date and working on it. It works on Mac, Linux, or Windows. It's called Hyper's CD Catalog, and you can find it. And this will do the scanning that I mentioned. It might be a little nerdy, if you know what I mean, because it's open source, so the user interface might not be super sophisticated, but it might be just what you want. It looks pretty good, actually. It has a good search capability. You'll find it at cdcat.sourceforge.net.
Okay.
And this one does exactly what I just described, which is you put the CD in the drive, it reads it, catalogs all the files on it. You could then go in and add information if you wanted to. Saves it and allows you to search that database. I think that sounds like a good choice.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Great. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much.
I'm sure we'll get additional suggestions, and we'll put those in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Here's one, Advanced Disk Catalog from Softonic. But you know what, James, if you'd capture all of the recommendations and you could just... James DeRuvo takes my show notes for me, and he's just going to try to get everything the chat room says and put this in the show notes. Here's another one. Whereisit-soft.com. Welcome to whereisit-soft.com, the home of shareware edition of Where Is It? Cataloging software, an application for Windows designed to help you maintain and organize a catalog of your computer media collection, including CD-ROMs, DVDs, audio CDs, diskettes, removable drives, hard drives, network drives, remote files. Sounds like this is also a pretty good choice. Where is it? -soft.com. I think sounds like it might be a good one too. This is nice because you can also update a disk. So if the disk is modified, you can sometimes you leave a disk open, you can add more files to it. You can reinsert the disk. It'll say, oh, I've seen this disk. Let me add that. We have somebody in the chat room says, yes, I've used that. It's quite good. So you can see there's quite a few solutions there. That's nice. Thank you. Chat room to the rescue. This looks like a pretty sophisticated program. Now you can see why Claudia wanted to get in there. Hans in Westlake Village, California. You're next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Hans.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I have two questions for you. First of all, I'm doing some renovations at a house, which gives me access to the exterior walls. And I wanted to replace my existing cable for the router and TV sets and I'm putting in RG6 quad shielded, which I understand is the best. But my question is this: is it better to put the splitters closer to where the signal comes in, or can I just and then run five cables in the walls, which is kind of a pain in the neck,
right?
Or can I just run one cable in the wall and put the splitters, let's say, in the attic where it's a little bit
I would do the latter. I don't think in terms of signal it makes any difference.
That's what I'm asking.
Let me ask the chat room. This is something that a ham, perhaps a ham radio operator, a radio amateur, would know a lot about. Dunk says, according to cable technicians he's spoken to, you always want the splitter closest to the source.
Closest to the source.
Yep.
Okay, so that means five cables out. All right.
All right, so there. That's
loose cable installers or not? Well, okay, technicians.
Who knows? You know, and I'll keep watching. The chat room has a lot of hams in it. Our ham radio guys are the best guy for something like that. He says Terry H says you might need a distribution amp if you're going a long way. That's true. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kyle Benham, the musical director. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Some good conversation going on in the chat room now about where you put the splitter. And I would say, I don't know if we reached a consensus. Did we reach a consensus? Lawn Dog says, it doesn't really matter. When the signal goes through the splitter, the signal is going to have a loss, whether you have it at the beginning or the end. That's true. Probably what you want to do is put a splitter and a distribution amp right at the beginning where the quality is the best. And to avoid further attenuation on the line, use the distribution amp to boost it up. I think I'd also put it where it's easiest to modify and work on, to be honest. And if you used an amp as a splitter, as Web4506 is suggesting, that might be the best result. Put an amp near the signal source, split it there. Len in Kingsburg, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi.
Hi, Leo. Good to speak to you.
Thanks, Len.
Well, we've got, well, not a problem necessarily, but an opportunity, let's put it that way.
All right.
Currently, our city band, which has been in operation for 125 years, plays six concerts during the summer.
Oh, that's neat.
And here, Well, it's been a great series, and the community really likes it. What we've been doing for about the last 25 years is recording the concerts, sneaker netting it to a local AM radio station, and rebroadcasting it. And this has worked fairly well within those limitations. Well, the radio station has become less enthusiastic about doing that. So we thought, since it's the 21st century, why don't we go straight to the web?
Yeah, who needs a radio station? Just put it on the internet.
Well, that's kind of the way we look at it. And since you and Twit TV do such a great job with your webcast, we thought it'd be good to ask you. The bottom line is, how can we inexpensively or for free stream these six concerts and archive them for viewing and listening to later on?
All right. You want audio only, or would you want to do video as well?
In the best of all possible worlds, both.
Yeah, I would do video. Why not? And certainly there are a number of places where you can stream for free. Audio quality tends to be somewhat deprecated on places like YouTube, which offers you free video storage and download. But if you've listened to the audio on YouTube, it can also be a little junky, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion would be, for the live streaming, either Ustream or Justin. We use both, Ustream.tv, Justin.tv. Both will give you high-quality streaming, and I think the audio will be pretty good. I would still record the audio locally, because that's going to be your best quality, and then you can put that out as the download.
Okay.
And you could do that on a website or somewhere where you could really make it high quality. So here's what I would suggest. Do you have a camera?
Yes, we do.
All right. I mean, look, if you want to do this the best, you'd have a camera, you'd have multiple mics, you'd have a mixer. I mean, that would give you a lot of capability. But you're probably going to record with one mic on the camera, right? How have you been recording it up to now?
Yeah, up to this point, we have been mixing and getting good audio.
Oh, excellent. So continue with that system, and then just pipe that into the video camera.
Okay.
So what you probably don't want to do, although you could, is have multiple cameras and a switcher. And now we're doing a television show, right?
Right.
That's maybe a little more than necessary. but I'll leave that to you. You want to get the best quality audio and video recording, and that's your master. When you're doing it a live stream, you can then output that to a computer that's connected to the internet, and then Justin or Ustream, and people can watch it live. Admittedly, the video and the audio quality won't be superb, but they're watching it live.
Okay.
Still record locally. So you have, and this is what we do too, by the way. So you have a high quality audio and video recording. Now, the audio and video, you can do a lot of different things. I think Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O, is the best place to put the video with audio. That does the best job of audio.
Okay, great.
Vimeo is free. And then if you want just an audio upload, SoundCloud.com will do high-quality audio.
Okay.
And none of these will cost you a penny.
That's great.
So you've put all your money into the production. And then use these free services, Ustream and Justin, Ustream.tv and Justin.tv, to stream it live. Vimeo.com, V-I-M-E-O.com, to store the recorded video and audio in high quality. SoundCloud.com to store and offer the download of audio. And all of this you can embed onto a web page. So if you have a web page, you can just...
And we do?
Yeah, perfect. You can embed the streaming. You can say, don't forget to watch tomorrow our concert. And have an embedded link to the Ustream or the Justin.tv video there. And then after the fact, you can say, and if you'd like to watch the previous concerts, here's a copy. Here, you know, you can actually embed the video into the webpage.
Oh, that's absolutely perfect.
Same thing with SoundCloud. You can embed a little player in the webpage, and the SoundCloud will play it back. I think it's amazing, really, if you think about it, what we're getting for free.
That is ideal for us,
yeah.
I know.
In fact, this is better than the local radio station.
For sure, and it's going to have a much wider reach than about a 10-mile radius.
It'll have a global reach, right.
Oh, that's great.
Hey, enjoy, Len. My pleasure. I'm thrilled that you're putting this out. This is exactly what, really, the world is for. What the world has come to is to share what you do with the rest of the world over the internet. It's fantastic. Just fantastic. There are some other alternatives that probably
would not be completely free. For instance, if you wanted to be an internet radio station and broadcast it as if, you know, you as a radio audio only broadcast, the Ustream and Justin are television, they're video. But if you didn't want us to do, I don't know why you would not want to do that. But if you just wanted audio so somebody could listen in their car, there are ways to do that as well. Live365.com is a place where you can do your own radio station. You could do an ad hoc radio station just for the day. Or you could, there's lots of ways to do this. I won't go on and on. There's enough. I like SoundCloud a lot, too. I found out about SoundCloud because my son, it's a German startup. They're from Berlin. My son uses it to put his music, as he likes to compose electronic music, puts it on SoundCloud to share it with his friends. And they've now approached us. A lot of radio stations are starting to use SoundCloud for their podcasts and so forth. The bandwidth is free. The sound quality is great. I really like it. 8888 Ask Leah. We still have another half hour to go. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, I'm here. Give me a ring. Our webpage, and we put links to everything I talk about, including all of those suggestions that I just gave Len. We put those on the webpage, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Coming up in about 15 minutes, 47 after the hour, it's Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and our giz whiz. He'll be joining us with his gadget pick. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hitting the road tomorrow after the show, we're going to go down to Las Vegas for the National Association of Broadcasters shows. I'm doing a number of things down there. Looking forward to it. In fact, one of the things I can't wait to do, Scott Wilkinson mentioned it earlier, is take a look at this new Canon 1D camera. High-end video camera for cinematographers. I mean, it's $15,000, but it's 4K. It's very high quality, and for a 4K camera, that's the lowest price I've ever seen. You can attend the NAB show if you're in the Vegas area. It's April 16th through 19th. We'll be at the South Hall, first floor on the left. Just use TWIT, and you can get an exhibit-only registration if you use the offer code TWIT, TWIT100, to get $100 off the conference Flex or Smart Pass. I've got a link to that at our TWIT website, twit.tv, at the bottom there. I also have a schedule of what we'll be doing at the NAB show, and we'll bring back for the radio show next weekend, I'll bring back interviews and information from that show. So that'll be a lot of fun. But if you're in the Vegas area, come by. We'd love to see you. You can get in for free if you use the offer code TWIT for your registration. We're the official streaming partner of the NAB show. And it's always a lot of fun. It's for broadcasters, but cool stuff happens there. Going back to the phones, Grayson is next in California. Hi, Grayson. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I just was wondering if you knew whether my internet was not working, because it works every now and then, and when I plug in the modem, or when I unplug the modem and plug it back in, it'll work for like 2 minutes, and then it'll just stop working altogether.
Well, that's definitely not working. That doesn't sound good. What kind of internet do you have?
It's Charter, cable modem.
And have you called them?
I called them when we first got it, and they sent a tech out, and he came and replaced the modem, and then it was working, and like 10 minutes after he left, it stopped working again.
How frustrating is that?
Yeah.
Well, that's definitely not right. I'm not sure why it's not doing that. Sometimes a cable modem will do that if you don't have a good, clean connection. The modem itself, sometimes the cable companies will bring cheap modems. I ended up buying my own modem ahead of time for my cable modem. At home, I used Comcast. And they give you an option. They say you can rent a modem from us for, I think it was $5 a month, or you can buy your own. And they gave you a list of compatible modems, and I bought one. And I did that because I wanted the latest, greatest, right? And you know, it would pay for itself in a year or two. And I figured, well, I'll probably be using this for a year or two. I bet your Charter offers the same thing. So that might be one good solution, is say, hey, can I buy my own modem? Maybe their modems are worn out by the time you get those rental modems, they reuse them again and again. But I would have them come out. I mean, the truth is, there's something wrong, and they have to fix it. It is not right. Cookie, Laguna Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, sir?
I'm well.
You talking earlier about enabling Java, and I need to know exactly what I should be removing. I have an older Mac. It's the G5 processor, and it's operating system 10.5.8.
Yeah, so you can't fix it, so you definitely want to get rid of it.
Okay, so what I have, I went to my system profiler, and in applications, I have two Java items. One says Java preferences, and the other says Java web start. The preferences is in the application utilities folder.
Right.
So do I just drag both of these to the trash, or
that
or
would what? Do it. You could also just, I think if you just removed web start, that would be sufficient. You could also, just remove the web start. What that is it's a little plug-in for Safari. So when you open a Java page in Safari, Safari will run web start and Java will run. And I think, yes, absolutely, by removing that, you're going to protect yourself from flashback and other programs that will do it. You can also disable it within Safari. There's a setting. But I like the idea of just deleting web start.
From the hard drive.
Yep.
Okay, because the web start is in the system folder in the library, and it says core services. So I was going, oh, wait a minute.
I don't blame you. It is a core service, but all it does is run Java.
Yeah, because sometimes when you delete core services, you can kiss everything goodbye.
I know what you mean. Well, let's say, just to be safe, Cookie, let's take it out of that folder, but leave it in the trash can or leave it on the desktop. In case something goes wrong, it can't run from the trash can.
Okay, so I can just go to the library and then drag it into the trash can.
Yeah, I think that's sufficient. Now, let me look here. ChetPod in our chat room is giving me a link to java.net, how to remove Java 6 from your Mac. And there are some terminal commands. What it will delete is the Java framework, which is in the system library frameworks, javavm.framework. You could also, that would really get rid of it.
Java VM?
Yeah, it's called Java VM dot framework. Yeah.
Dot framework?
Yeah, and that will remove it entirely. I'll tell you
and
what.
I don't have to do anything with my hard drive?
Then, well, it will remove it from your hard drive. Yeah, it's two files you're going to delete. That's one way to do it. I think removing the web start's sufficient.
Okay.
Just depends on how complete you want to be. Go ahead.
Okay, the web start would be my first choice.
I think that's fine. And just leave it in the trash for a while, and if everything works all right, which it will, you'll be fine. Yeah.
Okay, Java on the iPad 2.
Yeah.
The only thing I have there, it says Java, JavaScript.
There's no Java on the iPad. That's the good news.
Thank you.
One of the reasons I tell people who are concerned about security that to use the iPad is it's much safer.
Oh, okay. And Apple does a great job of updating security, at least on this older PC. iMac, it does anyway.
Good.
You know, I get updates, frequently, so it says security updates, and so I just do it.
So you're safe, Cookie.
Okay. Thank you very, very, very much, and I'll go in and put that in the trash from my hard drive.
My pleasure. I appreciate the call. And actually, this is something I wanted to answer because everybody else is asking the same thing. Steve Jobs is once quoted as saying, Java is not worth building in. Nobody uses Java anymore. It's this big, heavyweight ball and chain. He didn't like it. He didn't want it. In fact, he was right, because if you don't use it, but you still have it, you've got now this security problem that you're dealing with for something you don't even need. So Macs do not come with Java. You might want to install it if you want to do something like, for instance, run Minecraft, which is a very popular game written in Java. It turns out there are online games, too, that use Java. But it is fairly limited. And if you don't need it, don't have it. Just get rid of it. Jerry in Ojai, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Leo. I've got a problem with my computer that when I right-click to open a site, it doesn't do anything. But then if I do that left-click, and if I right-click and hit open, then it'll open up. Previously, I had a problem with an HP printer that I wound up having. I couldn't fax or print on it, and it wouldn't get in communication. So I deleted the program that I had got with it when I purchased it, and then I reloaded it. And when I when I everything checked out and I went to go onto the net, it came up with a warning that it would, it could, that program could crash the internet. And
I don't know what's going. I do not know what's going on. You should be able to uninstall and reinstall printer drivers. I don't know what that warning is. I think you've got some security software getting in the way. I'd get rid of it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Am I coming to?
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A perfect song for anybody who uses a computer. Crash! Dave Matthews Band. If you like the music we play, you know, we've got a playlist at the end of every show that my musical director, Kyle Benham, puts together. He puts it on his Google Plus account. See, there's somebody who uses Google Plus. It's Kyle, K-Y-L-E, space, B-E-N-H-A-M. But we also put it on our show notes at techguylabs.com. In fact, that's where we'll put everything from today's show, including the audio and video after the fact, and a whole lot more. Links to the chat room. And links to this guy here, Mr. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him the Gizwiz because he's our gadget guy. Joins us every week with some sort of cheesy gadget or other. Hello, Dickie.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
What do you mean? What do you mean? They're cheesy.
Easy.
Yes.
Have you ever heard the part of the Weekly Daily Gizwiz called Turn the Table Turkey?
Yeah, that's my part. Yeah.
Cheesy.
I'm the king of cheesy. Nothing wrong with a cheesy gadget.
Yeah, well, this is not so cheesy. Now, you and I know we travel with a lot of gadgets, and we find in hotel rooms there aren't many outlets, and we both, I think, travel with something from Monster and something from Belkin that will turn one outlet into three. But what if you're going overseas and have gadgets with those strange European plugs? Well, now someone has come to with a solution for that problem. It's from Conair. Conair has a line of gadgets called Travel Smart, and they have the new all-in-one Travel Smart travel adapter with USB.
Already bought it. Already bought it. Seriously.
You
mentioned this a couple of days ago.
I mentioned it on the week.
Already bought it. I love it. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm going to Norway. I'm going to Norway. I'm going to Norway next week, and I needed something like this. I like it. Now, it won't charge an iPad.
No, it will not charge an iPad. The USB port will charge, you know, smartphones and iPhone and iPod Touch. But the couple of neat things is normally when you buy one of these converters for – it's not a converter, by the way. It's an adapter. It comes in a little bag, and the different plugs are in the wide prong plug and the other plug. The neat thing about the all-in-one is that the adapter plugs plug into the device itself. So you're traveling with one single device. And if you're traveling within the U.S., you can take the two adapter plugs off and have a slightly smaller unit. It's about $30. And as I said, it can run three gadgets through the outlet while it's charging the fourth gadget. And as you said, it won't do the iPad.
But that's okay.
It's new to the market, and you want the TS-238AP. The 237AP does not have the USB portable charges, so you want the latest, and they're about the same price.
The nice thing is it's kind of all built in for – has the right connectors for any plug in the world. So
absolutely, and the AC prongs fold in to make it even smaller. It's well-engineered for under $30.
Yeah.
What'd you pay?
Under $30. I got it on Amazon. I can't remember.
Prime. He has Super Prime.
Super Prime.
They bring it like an hour later.
Before I order it now. It's amazing. Yes. Yeah. They just say, we knew you would want this, so we shipped it.
Yes. Well, yeah, you know, it's really a trick. I call them.
Oh.
See, in the morning we do the show.
Yeah.
I call them and
Leo's
say,
going to want this.
Stock?
Yeah.
Leo's going to want it. Bring it to his house.
You might as well just bring it over. Yeah. Well, that's good because it's true. You're right. Usually I do want it.
I'm just checking. Let's see what I paid.
Yeah, when is the car airplane
26,
coming?
Yeah, really? No, I did not buy that. $26.26 I paid.
That's a buy. That's a buy.
Yeah, because it was Amazon Prime, I got the overnight two-day shipping. There's only one left in stock, though, so go ahead, kids. You could fight this one out.
Grab it. Grab it.
Yeah. No, I was pretty pretty happy with it. But I'll let you know when I come back from Norway if it worked.
Yeah. When are you going to Norway?
Oh, golly. Next, in a week, I think. Something like that.
Oh, okay.
It's
okay,
for a photo show. It's called the Norwegian Light Festival. And, I hope there's some photographers there because it'll be kind of embarrassing if I go. I'm bringing all my
bring a long lens so you can,
I'm leaving right after the show next week. And then I'll be there through May 1st. So, Scott Wilkinson will be doing the radio show, our home theater guy, on the 28th and the 29th. And we'll get somebody to do the Giz Whiz with you. Who do you like?
Okay, great.
Who's your favorite?
Well, you know, Tom is fun. They're all fun.
All right. We'll have somebody special to work with you. Thank you, Mr. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, the host of the Giz Whiz. You'll find him at GizWiz, G-I-Z-W-I-Z dot B-I-Z. That's his website. You'll find a link to the Con Air there. You'll also find all the other stuff he talks about on the show and a link to the What the Heck Is It page, a chance for you to win an autographed copy of the May-June issue of Mad Magazine with Lady Liberty. And I mean Lady Liberty on the cover. Yeah. So that's good. Thank you, Dick. We'll see you. Yeah, okay. Stick around because we'll do the weekly Daily Giz Whiz, our podcast. We'll do that next, right after
I'll
the radio
here.
Show. Thank you. Just a few more minutes left in the Tech Guy show. Let me see. I'll get Margaret on the line from Los Angeles next. Hi, Margaret. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you. I'm wondering whether you can recommend a simple cell phone for me to use. I've used the Nokia for a few years, and I liked it a lot. I now have an AT&T, and I'm having nothing but problems with it. If I don't answer immediately, the message goes into storage. I don't know how to retrieve it. I don't know how to call back the party that just called me. And I try to follow it in the owner's manual, and in spite of all my education, I cannot do it.
I know. You know, I'm a little torn here. When Steve Jobs announced the iPhone in 2007, he said, and he was right, cell phones are too hard to use. They're too complicated. No one can figure them out. And so he introduced really the first really good smartphone. But, of course, it's really hard to figure out. It's really complicated unless you're a true geek. It might be a little bit better designed than most, but it's still hard to use. There are a number of phones that are designed to be a little bit easier to use. One of the people in the chat room. Now do you want to stay with AT&T or?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Nokia makes a supposedly very easy to use kind of semi smartphone with a great user interface called the Asha, A-S-H-A. I'm not sure who sells that in the U.S. I'll have to do some research to find out. But that's a nice little phone, the Nokia Asha, A-S-H-A. My mom used a Jitterbug. She liked it, but I don't know. It may not have all the features you want. It's a very simple phone. You might be insulted when you see the ad copy for the Jitterbug. They say it's for seniors. But I think it's a really great little phone. That's from greatcall.com. Those are a couple of things I would try anyway. Thanks for the call, Margaret. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.